You're listening to the All Systems Go podcast, the show that teaches you everything you need to know to put your business on autopilot. Learn how to deploy automated marketing and sales systems in your business the right way with your host, the professor of automation himself and founder of Automation Bridge, Chris Davis.
Welcome to the All Systems Go podcast. I'm your host, Chris L. Davis, the founder and chief automation officer of Automation Bridge, an online publication for small business automation, where we train digital marketing professionals to become automation service providers. And in this episode, I want to talk about the importance of maintaining an experimental approach to building your business with Matt Giannisi. He's a self-proclaimed bare hands brand builder and the creator of MoneyLab.co, SwimUniversity.com, and BrewCabin.com. Matt and I, we sat and we talked about the various experiments that he runs in his business. It's what he does at MoneyLab.co, and he just publishes all of them. So you can watch as many as you want at your leisure. But we talk about these experiments, his findings, and how this experimental approach has benefited him in building businesses while other companies struggle with stagnation. It's something that I think you all will really enjoy. Before we get into it, if you're new to the podcast, first off, let me say welcome. And do me a favor, listen to this episode in its entirety. And when you're done and you see value in what we're doing here, make sure you subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and review. The All Systems Go podcast can be found in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're on YouTube. Anywhere you get your podcast, you can download and subscribe to the All Systems Go podcast. If you're a listener and you haven't subscribed yet, please do so, so you do not miss an episode every Thursday. Weekly, every Thursday is a new episode. And while you're at it, if you have not, please leave your 5-star rating and review. It would be greatly appreciated. If for any reason you're trying to figure out, I can't quite leave a review in this app, right? I've been told that. I don't know where to leave a review in the podcasting app. We've got you covered. You can go to automationbridge.com/review and we will handle and take care of the collection and posting of your review for you. All right. So with that being said, let's jump into today's episode. Matt, welcome to the All Systems Go podcast, man. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yes, this is I'm excited to dive into it. Building brands with your bare hands.
Yeah. Try to rhyme it.
I just wish I would have came up with that, you know. So when you wrote it in, I said, oh man, that is going to make for an amazing episode. So give our listeners some insight about you and your journey to your business now and what you do.
I think it started when I was a kid. I was in the pool industry. I've worked in it since I was 13. And so, much later, as I worked in the pool industry and go to college, I just worked and worked and worked. And then there's a certain point where I was in a band and we needed a website, and I decided to learn HTML because we couldn't afford to hire a website designer. And this is like pre social media and stuff. So there was like it was pre MySpace. So I ended up learning how to design websites. And like the long story short of it is like I learned how to build a website. I was at this pool company that I worked at. My boss caught me like working on my band's website at work, and then hired me to do the website for the company. And then I ended up getting into website design, and like I ended up moving to another company, and then I got poached back to that company to be the marketing director. And so all through this time, I had this idea to take the knowledge that I had from Swim University, the knowledge that I had from taking care of swimming pools and hot tubs and stuff, and my knowledge of website design and marry them together. And that's how I created Swim University back in 2004, 2006 era.
Wow.
And then, yeah, just from there, sort of barreled my way through of like, I'm not a good writer, or at least I wasn't at the time. Like, I was mostly just musician and kind of a video editor, but mainly for music and stuff.
Yeah.
So writing was like absolute. I mean, it's literally why I dropped out of college, because of writing. I was so bad at it. So I, yeah, I ended up, and that's what I do for a living now. I write. So, but yeah, it took about from 2006 to 2012, maybe, to until I was able to go full time with it. And the only reason I was able to go full time was because I was laid off from my job. And so I took a year to just double down on writing and filming and making as much content as possible and building my own products. And then that first year I made 40K for the year. And I was like, I did it. I'm full time. So, and ever since then, I just kind of like built a bunch of other brands and, you know, focused always on Swim University as like my main flagship area. But yeah, it's just kind of just worked up a bunch of skills and became a jack of all trades. And here I am.
Yeah, so that was a pretty bold move, because I'm thinking back in 2004, 2005-ish, when you're just launching Swim University, I don't even think Lynda was like the main site for learning online that it is today. So like, where did you get the guts to say, hey, look, I'm going to create this university, when there wasn't a whole lot of models out there that said, hey, look at, try this, do this, you know?
That was actually a problem. I didn't have any. I mean, I tried to follow people, but all the information I got was never applied to Swim University specifically.
Yep.
So that's why I say I barreled my way through, because it was all trial and error and trying to figure it out. For me, I think books. I had a book on SEO and a book on AdSense and a book on like HTML and CSS. So I was reading books and just writing it in Notepad and trying to like figure it out. And so you're right, Lynda was kind of there, but I didn't have $50 a month or whatever just to pay for it. So I ended up like, I would just do the trial and then, you know, do a lesson real quick and then jump out. But and like I pirated all my software, Photoshop.
I remember the days, man. It's interesting, because when you say that, I don't want to say when times were simpler, right? But
Ken,
there was
the internet was simpler,
right? It was something to be said when the resources were a bit more limited. There was some discipline built into the scarcity, right? So whatever discipline you lacked with like being focused, you couldn't, because there wasn't a lot. So if you got a good book, You read that book. You did what that book said.
And it was the only book, you know? It was Podcasting for Dummies. That was
it. That was it. And one of the hardest parts, I'll say, like, as a mentor at times, is getting people to just focus on the curriculum and the program that they're in. You know, it's like there are so many other things that you could be doing, and everybody is selling. Everybody is selling something. At some point, you just got to turn it off and just focus in on this one thing till it produces the results that you need, you know?
You know what? And you say that, and the thing that I think about, which is completely not in the internet space, is that is my number one tip when I teach people how to take care of their pools. And I did that when I was working in retail.
Wow.
Because somebody would come, because where I grew up like Philadelphia, New Jersey area. And so I don't know why, it was just, but pools and hot tubs are a big thing up in the Northeast. And we had a lot of pool stores just on our one street, on our one corridor where we were located.
Okay.
And so somebody would come in and talk to me, and I have my process on getting rid of algae and clearing up your pool. And I have my way, and my way works. I've tested it on thousands of people who've come in, and, you know, and even my own pool. But then you'd have those customers that would come in, and they would say, oh, I was across the street and I was talking to them and they told me to use this. And what do you think? And I'm like, either stick with them or stick with me. You can't, once you start mixing it, then it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad for you.
Yep. So, man, wow. I love it. I love that analogy too, man. Cause I could see that. Well, so-and-so said, if I get this product, it's like, look, man,
Everyone's got a process.
Everyone's got a process.
And everyone's got their way to the end. And it's not to say that each one is wrong or right. Maybe one is faster. Maybe one is emotional, you know, however it is. Maybe one's cheaper. But if you stick to one curriculum, you stick to one process, and then you optimize it for yourself for what you're trying to do, I think that that is the, you know, because you want to buy all the courses. You know, you want to learn all the things. You want to try all the productivity software. But at the end of the day, like, for me personally, on that note, I use one piece of software to kind of do everything because I know that I can get – I know I will use a tool as a crutch to not do something.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know you. You're putting the safeguards in from the software. Safeguard yourself from the software. That's great, man. So one of the things you see it. It's how you started is how you've grown, right? It's just like this testing out, this ability, this willingness to go in and just, hey, let's figure it out. I'm okay with being wrong. Hopefully I'm right. Either way, we're going to learn something. You know, we'll take those learnings and go on from it. But before I transition, I felt a little jealousy, I will say, when you said your boss saw that you were developing a website for, and then was like, hey, can you do that for us?
Yeah, yelled at me first, but yeah.
Right.
I got in trouble and then a job.
Yeah.
With no pay raise.
Oh my goodness. Since you're already doing it, but it just, it speaks to sometimes, you know, that moonlighter, that person who's working the 9 to 5. And the only way I remember as an engineer, the only way that I knew to turn my job into a customer was to like leave and come back as a consultant. That was like the only way. Right. And in government contracting, there was a whole way for that. And it was just like, that's overwhelming to me. So I just stayed until they kicked me out. But to see your process, I got a little chuckle and a little bit of jealousy. I was like, I wonder if somebody would have seen my alternate skills, you know?
To and I was pretty either good or bad at showing people that, you know, without hiding it. They're like, oh, you play guitar? I'm like, yeah. What do you want?
Right.
What do you want from me? And that's actually, you know, it's funny because that is the reason I started MoneyLab is because I was so behind the scenes on Swim University. Like, no one knows what I do.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And they always had questions like, are you the one editing? Are you the one designing the website? Who designed your website? What theme did you use? And I'm like, I did it. You know, it's the whole bare hands thing. Like every single I literally hand coded every line. I edited every line of the video. Like, and I just wanted to tell people that that's what I was doing. And so I started a public site like MoneyLab where I got to showcase those abilities and maybe do the same, maybe do the exact same thing I did at that pool store, which was like, you know, hey, this is what I do. You want to hire me? Yeah.
It's a winning formula, man. And one of the things that I love about MoneyLab is the wide array of experiments that you run. I was introduced to you by a mutual friend, Greg, and I went in and checked you out and I was like, oh my goodness, look at all. I mean, and they're good experiments, you know, they're not just like, hey, what if I change this button? It's like well thought out, you know, and well documented. So it's been a huge part of your business are, you know, running experiments. How would you say for people getting started? Because here's what I find, Matt, when people are and it doesn't matter how long they've been in business, it's something about going online. They get this feeling like they've got to get it right. They've got to get the right website, the right logo, the right this, the right that. And really, all of this is exploration. We're exploring and identifying what works. And when we find it, we double down on it. But there's a level of exploration that's always present in a business, more so in the beginning than any time out of necessity in the beginning. But what I like about you is you've kept it at the forefront beyond just the beginning. So talk to our audience a bit about how you approach a business when you build a brand. how you approach that in your experimental approach to building brands?
Well, one, I think I'm guilty of, you know, trying to be perfect and doing the right thing. And I can tell you just from like Swim University's history, the amount of times I've changed URL structures, which I know people are like super scared to do because of SEO. And I'm like, I've done it 17,000 times. Like I'm not worried about changing anything. I'm not worried about changing the design or moving things around or whatever. But for me, I have my principles, and those things came, you just develop them over time. And like, for me, one of them is page speed is everything to me because it is the one area in SEO that I have over even the biggest companies. The biggest companies can't turn around and make a really fast website. They won't. They can't. Their ship's too big to steer. And so for me, I can go, oh, tomorrow my site is loads under a second, you know? And that's sort of that agility, but from like an experimental perspective, one of my principles is I consider myself an idiot. I consider myself, you know, I don't know anything. And I also believe that no one else does either. And so we're all sort of in this, whatever this is, this, tiny blue marble that we call Tinker Tink. No one has any sort of like right or wrong way. There's always a new path that can be forged. And so my motto is everything is an experiment. Doesn't matter what it is. And I have my beliefs on why I choose specific experiments. Sure. Like I'm choosing an experiment now to develop a sales funnel, even though I actively rallied against building a traditional sales funnel for so many years, because I was just like, and this is something I'm working on, as a self-aware individual, I am working on this idea that like, I am no longer a rock star. I never was one. And I have this fear of selling out, right? I have this fear of being corny, of being like looked at as like a guy that sold out. And I think like, you look at it, you can see it on MoneyLab. Like I actively have no lead magnet. I purposefully put it out there that like, no, I'm the cool one on the internet world. I'm not, you know, and to my detriment, because no one signs up for that. But it does weed a certain amount. It does like weed out, you know, certain people and bring in the ones that I really want. But it's, you know, in everything that I've done, you talk about brave. Did you say bravery? Or you mentioned bravery? Or like, maybe you didn't.
We haven't talked about bravery. We were just not yet.
But this idea that like you're willing to try something and do something and like how do you
we did talk about bravery. My bad.
Yeah, like how do you not feel that failure? Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm just like, what do I have to lose? Like. Well, okay. So one of my motivations in doing any of this stuff of like not having a traditional job is I never want to work for any other human being again. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. I've always kind of rallied against authority while at the same time being very loyal. So, I was I worked for the same company for a very long time for the same guy, but the whole time I'm like, well, I can do what he's doing. You know, he's no one, you know, he also doesn't have a college education and he's like, just like me. So I can do this too. And so, you know, that motivation, which is a kind of a negative motivation, right? I never want to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, what do I have to lose? If I get to work for myself, but I make $10 a day or $10 a year, I mean, thankfully I have a support system where it's like, I can go move in with my parents and I'll just, you know, and I told my mom, like, she's like, when are you going to get a job? And I was like, I have one. I rather live in a box than having to answer to anybody else. And that was the motivation. And so I'm willing to try different things in order to get there, because there is no safety net. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like, well, why not? You know, I could lose it, but I never really had it to begin with. That makes any sense.
Tell me this. I feel like now as an engineer, I tend to push the limits to understand the breaking point. Cause then I it's like, I'm better when I break something because I know its limitations and I know what I can operate within. Right.
Yeah.
For you, when you're running these various experiments on business, I know it's to see what's working, right? Like how, but is there this why that's running behind you? Like, okay, but why? What if I did it? You know, like, is that the driver for you? And is it the main takeaway that you say, okay, that's why now I know. And, you know, and it allows you to be a bit more targeted in your approach. What is the experiment process? How is that? How does it aid you? I should say.
Well, it is a hobby, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah.
You know, why do I spend all night and all day coding a website from scratch or designing an experiment that ultimately will fail? You know, and in fact, it'd be okay if it failed because then I learned something.
That's it. Right?
And I just like doing it. You know, I do it with homebrewing as well. As when I brew beer, it's like I will push a beer to its limits and go, well, that didn't work. I'll drink it, but I'm not giving that to anybody else. So it's just because I like doing it. So I think the why isn't, you know, money. It's never been money, unfortunately, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, for some people it is. Again, I just don't want to work for anybody else. So the money is just kind of a byproduct. And it allows me to push experiments a little bit further and have a little bit more to lose, I guess. The stakes are a little higher.
Sure, sure,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
And so it makes it more exciting. It's like gambling, I guess. But yeah, I'm also not competitive either. So I think if I'm not competitive, then what drives me to do anything? And it's like, well, I compete against myself. You know, it's like golf, I guess.
The best competition, man.
Right. So I'm not trying to go up against anybody else in this space because why? And also, you know, people have taught me little bits and pieces here and there throughout my, you know, my business building. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I kept learning to just do it yourself. Try these things. No one has the right answer for you. You will pick and you will get you will follow a process and you will put it in place. And when it's all said and done, it's going to look totally different from where you started.
Yep.
And you have to be okay with, you know, not trying to fit it into a box because, you know, And then again, like it's also this whole, I don't know. I just like it, I guess. It's really kind of, and I think, you know, I know, like when you say you're an engineer, like a software developer.
I was an electrical engineer by trade.
Electrical engineer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's puzzles.
That's exactly it, man.
And I love puzzles.
Yeah.
In the internet space when there's actual outcomes. I don't like puzzles that are on my, like, coffee table because at the end of it, I'm like, I knew it was going to be a boat. I knew that. It's all in the box.
There's no mystery.
There's no mystery.
I started.
And now I got to take it all apart and do it again? No, thanks.
No, that's good. Matt, I can't stress enough the importance of it. And I feel like I'm probably, you're definitely more structured in it as in you've built a business around your hobby. Right.
But I mean,
for me,
pools isn't my hobby, but the act of building a business is a hobby. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I'm, you know, we do a lot of technology assessment. You know, I train automation service providers. And the thing is, you have to be good at technology to recommend the best technology for building out their systems. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I love playing, you know, I love playing around with technology. So I am. It's not even an option for me. I'm never the type that you can give me a tool and I'm just like, okay, that's the one I'm going with. I have to look at least Matt, just at least one other one just for a comparison. I'm not wired like that. Now, again, it benefits me because I've created a space like you have with Money Lab to where that type of approach is valuable, right?
That is the crux of it. You know, that is the reason Money Lab exists and the reason it's built on this idea that, like, I can do whatever I want because it's the way that I do it. It's how I'm wired. I am not, you know, when I say I build brands with my bare hands, I am very bad at building one brand with my, you know, like I have to start and build something else.
Yeah.
And so what Money Lab was an excuse to have these micro projects of starting new things, but contained in a way that wouldn't send me off the deep end in, like, you know, there was a time in my life where I was building Swim University and also building a social network for dogs. So I don't even like dogs all that much, but, like, that's what I thought would be fun to do. And and so, like, it was just like, and so, yeah, Money Lab is like that. It's a container for that. And it's value.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely, man.
Right.
Absolutely. So I want to talk about a couple of your experiments, man. Mm-hmm. One that caught my ear in this podcast, and then another one that I looked on the website and I wanted to ask beforehand, page speed.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming when you talk about the experiment you ran on page speed, which, by the way, I am 100% on board. Like, if it does not load, especially if it's a lead generating, and if you're running advertising to that page, oh my goodness. Might as well flush the money down the toilet if it's not going to load fast. So was that experiment, what did you find? Is this where you were hand coding a page versus, like, a page builder or something like that?
Well, WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
So I was using WordPress, and I thought, you know, for me, when I look at just user experience in general, to me is like what Google is going to protect you from not falling in the SERPs, right? Yeah, SEO wise. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you can deliver what Google considers a great user experience.
Mm.
And to me, that is first and foremost how fast it loads.
Yeah.
And then limit the distractions and the interruptions that come, you know, it's like when you read a news site and you're scrolling and it's like constantly jumping because new ads are coming in. It's annoying.
It's crazy.
And, you know, they don't have to deal with SEO, but for my business, I do. And like I said earlier, you know, these bigger companies they have way more money and employees than I do to write. I mean, somebody could take any one of my sites and build it from scratch in a week, you know, if they had the time and the money for it, you know, huge company.
Yep.
The one thing that they're not going to have, though, is that I know how every single, like, line of code works on my site. Mm. And so if I want to make something fast or I want to make something better, I can just go in. It's a superpower, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to wait for a designer to come in, you know, have to rely on them being, you know, an expert in page speed or whatever. You know, it's like, oh, we have WordPress, but then we use Elementor because it's like it's another framework on top of a framework. And that's just what we do. And it's like, well, I said, no. How do we get it down to the bare bones? Because that's what's going to ultimately make it faster. Like, I know what code bloat is. And so it's like, we'll just remove all the code. You just have words on an HTML page. That's going to load the fastest and then build up from there. But then constantly remove and tweak until you have it. And so when I did that, you know, it's hard to measure the success of that, like, in a micro sort of metric area. It's I changed the speed by, you know, I improved the speed by half a second and I, you know, gained 2 percentage points in the, you know, whatever. It's not like that. It's more holistic. And so I was like, I'm going to speed up my website and go from, I think it was loading at, I think, like, 3 or 4 seconds to under a second.
Wow.
And without, you know, I'm not really big on, like, it's not true scientific experiments for the most part, because I'm not, like, isolating variables and testing one thing at a time.
Sure.
But, you know, I noticed a huge bump in just traffic and in my rankings.
Wow.
And I've seen other people, Brian Dean, for example, from Backlinko, do a page speed experiment on YouTube and determine at the end of it that, oh, you know what? We're going to go back. We did all this page speed. We made our page faster, but it didn't actually improve anything. Mm. And I was like, well, it did. You just didn't measure it correctly. It improved your user experience. Like, just, it just does, you know? Yep. So yeah, if you ask somebody what would they want as far as like, how do you want your page to load slow or faster? They're always going to say faster. So it's kind of like, there's no reason to even test it. You just do it. Yeah. And you know what I mean? It's cause it's just the right thing to do for your customer or for your visitors.
Yeah. And we're seeing it in, I feel like landing pages in the marketing space, it began. I started with lead pages. That was my entry into the SaaS space.
Yep.
And it was about the ease of building, because all you could do is build HTML pages back then, and it was overwhelming. So
yeah,
the first version of lead pages was really rendering HTML. It was like software that rendered HTML.
Yeah.
And the pages loaded super fast. In fact, you could download a lead pages template, and it would be in all HTML, and you can put that on your website,
right,
and change a few things, and it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And somewhere, I don't know where, this would be an interesting thing for me to look into, somewhere, I think it was right around ClickFunnels and Thrive Themes, where it became more page builder and builder-esque.
Yeah.
And it was a battle, because lead page was like, we don't want drag and drop. And the industry was like, we want drag and drop. ClickFunnels is doing it. Thrive is doing it.
Right.
So when you switch to drag and drop,
you have
they
code.
Lost that, you know, and that HTML render and that speed. And now there's tools now, fastest loading speed times ever, landing pages. So it's like full circle, you know, again.
Right.
But absolutely, man, I think that it's something that's a lost expectation when you get a beautiful design. A lot of times people are distracted by how beautiful the site looks and how clean. And he's like, well
and I'm guilty of that too. Mm-hmm. You know, like as a designer, I've done parallax scrolling and all kinds of like, you know, goofy sort of designy things. And then at the end of the day, I mean, you're looking at every website on this small little black mirror.
Yeah.
And none of that matters anymore. Like design really doesn't matter anymore as far as, you know, and so all of the, you know, going back to what you said before of like, you want to get your business and your website perfect from the ground up. And so I get that, because that's how I started with Swim University and everything. If you look at my first version of Swim University compared to today's version, you would think, I took a step backwards, because I took there's no image, like the images are gone, like the background images, like it's not overly designed anymore. It's stripped down to basically, how does it look on my phone? Because 75% of my visitors are looking at it on a mobile device, you know, out probably at their pool. Like, what do I got to add? You know, and the same thing with content too. Like, they don't have sidebars on this mobile phone, so why would I have one anywhere? So. Yep. Yeah, I just it evolved over time, but I kept removing, you know, because to me, I want it. Again, it's always been about, you know, you have your different like time periods of like what you were trying to do, right?
Yep.
You have your AdSense period where you're trying to make money on ads, and it's like, well, I have to have a sidebar, and I'm going to sacrifice a little bit of page speeds to make some money.
Yep.
And it's like, that's fine. And I get that. I get asked that all the time. Like, Matt, if you just put, you know, AdThrive or Azoic on your site, like, do you know how much money you'd make? And I'm like, do you know how much that would piss me off as a visitor? I can't do that to people. If I don't want it done to me, why would I do it to them?
I know, man. Now we get in that delicate balance of marketing and everybody who takes it and just really bastardizes it, right? They just... slap a layer of marketing on their website, pop-ups everywhere, 50 lead magnets, this and that, and it really just makes it off-putting for those of us who do it right. But then at the same time, we can't ignore what works, and it's like, okay,
I know. if you go to moneylab.co/email, I did a parody on this many years ago where it's basically a post with a bunch of pop-ups that are delicately timed, yeah. and it's just begging and asking for your email address, but it's funny. So it's if you're interested, it was my take on it, and it's ironically, it was like one of the first pieces I did on MoneyLab because I was angry at the industry with all the pop-ups, and I was like, and the welcome mats, and you know, I was just like, I can't visit any of these websites because they're just so annoying, and I got mad, and I went on the computer and I started like curse writing, like just like F this and F that, and I'm just like mad, angry writing, and then I took that piece. It was like maybe 500 words or whatever. And for like a month, I kept going back to it and refining it and cleaning up the language and like fixing it and then adding in like the pop-ups that are timed as you're reading it. And like, the ironic part is that I put that out, it went viral, and I was able to gain 1,600 email subscribers in 24 hours because it got on Hacker News. It was like, everyone felt the same thing I felt, but I just put it into words, you know?
I love it. But, you know, I think therein lies the true approach, right? Is not a lazy, haphazard template approach, but use these strategies, use these tools in a way that's authentic to you. So, like, these pop-ups were, like, part of your personality coming out and like, I hate this. Look at what I just did. See, now you got to close this box.
Right.
You know, so it was a layer of authenticity that went through it that kind of let people's guard go down. Like, okay, this is still marketing, but it's authentic. So it's okay. Like,
right. Right. Yeah. And that's hard to do, but I was just mad. And that's when my real true feelings came out.
Oh man, I love it. So, experiment number two. You had one where you were, I think it was ConvertKit and ActiveCampaign.
I did two of them. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, to keep it brief, what were you experimenting and what were your findings in that one?
My goal was to move. The first experiment was to move over to ConvertKit from, I think it was MailChimp I was on at the time.
Okay.
And really set up a funnel. Like really get it set up and really kind of double down on email marketing. That failed miserably. If you read that experiment, it is me trying all these things. And at the end of it, just kind of giving up and going like, I suck at this, damn, I didn't get it right.
Yep.
So then, so email marketing has always been this thing, this bug in my system, right? For some reason, cannot wrap my head around it. I can't figure it out. But I always want to because it's like this nagging thing of a marketer, right? And it's like, you should be good at this. And so then I was like, you know what? Here's what I want. And I had to sit down with myself, just, you know, with staff too, just kind of like thinking about Swim University, my website, and going, okay, somebody subscribes to Swim University and they're a pool owner. What do they get? How do they get that, right? And that what they should get is every week, maybe two times a week, they're getting emailed tips about taking care of their pool exactly when they need it. There's no reason to send them a tip on opening up their pool in November because they're not going to do it in November. They're going to do it in April or May, right? And so I needed a way to time that, and I can do it manually. Because I can just sit there and go, oh, it's April 1st, so, you know, and write the email.
Sure.
And so that was ultimately what I wanted. The phrase that I used was email as a service. So when you subscribe to Swim University, you're technically getting like a reminder service to do certain things, but it's packed with information, right?
I love it. Yeah.
That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with like ConvertKit, I wasn't able to automate it. I had, you know, there's no real way to do it based on date. And I wanted it to be something that repeated every year because nothing changes. The next year, you still own a pool. You still need those same reminders.
Yep.
So I started researching different ESPs, email service providers, to find, you know, how could I create a loopable seasonal automation?
Yep.
And, you know, I looked at all of them. And ActiveCampaign, actually, I reached out to them and I had a call, and the guy showed me Like, I told him what I wanted. Yep. He was like, you could do it this way. And he showed me, and I'm like, sold instantly. Yep. I have never seen that before. Done. And so I was like, okay. And that was the experiment, was I'm going to move over to ActiveCampaign because I'm trying to set up this type of system. And now that I'm over there, it's like the amount of power that I have over some of the other ESPs of being able to say, oh, well, yeah, now it's May. You get 4 emails, every week at a certain period of time. I can change those emails. I can, if you take certain actions in emails, I can move you or like temporarily put you here and put you there. And I'm like, all right, I'm really going to sit down and figure this all out. And so that, and so I was able to put that all together and do that as an experiment. And the next experiment that I'm working on is really like fleshing all of that out. And, you know, now that I know the power of ActiveCampaign and I know what I can and can't do, it's like, okay, ultimately at the end of the day, I need to provide helpful information to my audience when they need it the most.
Yeah.
And if that's the bottom baseline, then it really shouldn't be that hard, right? It's just that's a matter of like setting it up and automating it.
I love it. You know, if you were in the marketing industry, you'd have a name for it, and then you'd have a product that walks people through how to do it.
I should. See, this is why I'm bad. Right? I can't sell out like that.
Right. But I love the fact that you know, when you talk about email as a service, and it's like, hey, I've got this notification service for you. You don't even have to worry about anything. I'll just remind you. Every time you need something, I'll just remind you that it's such a real life example that can easily be translated. And I think that's the trouble with a lot of times is people can't make that connection, because email marketing is supposed to be email marketing. And this is something else. But when we can kind of break free and say, like you said, man, you're like, OK, what is it that I'm trying to do? Yeah. Right. And just use the raw process and say, this is what I want. I love it, man. I think that's spot on. That's a amazingly effective use of email, man. All right. I got to ask one more. I know we're close to our time here. One more. You were sharing a story with me about YouTube.
Yeah.
And the reason why this is so timely at the time that we're recording this now, Matt, is because I'm having the same conversation with different people. Okay?
Okay. Right.
Different industries. And I'm telling them, listen, if you do less but higher quality, it will have a bigger impact. Because most of the time when somebody starts a business, the first thing they do is set up 5 social media accounts. I gotta be on Facebook, I gotta be on LinkedIn, I gotta be da-da-da. And it's just like, what if you only did one? And then that one, what if you only posted like really good content? And then you and I are talking and you did that.
I did that. Yeah.
You did that.
I haven't written about it anywhere.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to, you know, it's, it was an experiment. It was kind of like a personal experiment, but I guess it really belongs on Money Lab. And now that I have like actual, you know, sort of data, and I, you know what, let me just, for the sake of this conversation, let me just pull up the actual stats, so I'm not just talking fake numbers or whatever. Because it's like, it's impressive, but also not, right? Because we're talking small numbers at the end of the day, but and the niche is really small as well. But okay, so what happened? So I have a site that I created called Brew Cabin, and I teach people how to homebrew. And because I've been homebrewing longer than I've been internet marketing. And so it's always been a hobby, like a personal hobby. I don't really talk about it all that much. And a few years ago, I kind of decided that, you know, this is a hobby that I really enjoy. And I'm a really huge nerd. Like, I read all the books. I'm sort of behind the scenes with it. I don't really know any other homebrewers. I only homebrew for like me and my friends.
Okay.
And so I thought, let me just create this site and let me start to put my expertise out there and see what happens. So that just kind of casually, you know, putting it out there. And then in this year, so we are in 2020, we moved, we bought a house, and it has been my dream for like 15, 20 years to build a home brewery, like a brewery in my house. And actually part of the criteria of looking for a house was having a space that where I could do that. Mm-hmm. And so we found one, and we moved in September. And so October, I started the process. It was the first thing I was allowed to do when we moved in here. Yeah. And so my friend said to me, he's like, you know what? You should, at the very least, you should document the process of building it and for yourself at the very most. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, maybe you're right. And so what I did was, you know, anytime a contractor had to come over, or I had to do anything in the brewery, I would bring my camera out, iPhone or whatever I had on me, and I would just talk it through and film and just get footage. And I was, and then I thought to myself, well, I do this at Money Lab. I do these like kind of real time, you know, documentation experiment things. And so I'm like, well, that's what this is. And so it started as I'm writing it in Brew Cabin the same way I would write in Money Lab. But I had all this footage. And so I'm like, I'm going to put together a video. And since I'm a homebrew nerd, I'm also like a media nerd. And so those worlds, like, I know every homebrewing channel on the internet. Yep. I have every DVD that exists, documentary, whatever. Yep. I own it all. I am a sucker for it. And so there hasn't really been any sort of like homebrew. I love a lot of it and I'll watch it because I'm into the hobby. But as far as like production value, there's only been like a handful. And so I thought, well, you know, I have all this footage and I know how to do this work. I love editing. I'm like, I can do it. So what if I took all this footage and made it into like a mini documentary on building a brewery?
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay. So that's when I decided I'm going to do it. And it was going to, and I basically said to myself, all right, well, this is the start of my YouTube channel. This is going to be the first video I upload for my YouTube channel. So I'm going to set the bar, you know, of quality. Mm-hmm. And I spent 40 days, almost 2 months on editing and filming. I wrote a song, an original song that's like kind of like baked in the middle of it. That's part of the storyline.
Yeah.
I worked on the thumbnail. I worked on like it's just very highly edited and all the music was original. I wrote all the music in it and I just put every single piece of like talent and skill that I had into this one video. And that was the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just put it out and that was it. And so I watched YouTube just serve my video forever. I didn't promote it. I didn't, you know, really, I don't really have that big of an audience to promote it to.
Yep.
But YouTube just, for whatever reason, I think the quality over everything else, like you can just watch that video and go, there was so much effort put into this video. Mm-hmm. And as a homebrewer, you appreciate it and you comment and you like and you do these things and YouTube just knows it. And the algorithm took my video and took it off. So So like that happened, but then I was like, all right, and now I need my sophomore effort. I need my follow-up. and I picked a subject that I thought was so underserved in the homebrewing space. I picked water chemistry as a topic, as my second topic. At the end of the day, I've started the channel in October, two videos published. The channel has 3,660 subscribers. And I was accepted into the partnership program with two videos because I had that much watch time and I had that many subscribers all organically.
Yeah. You had a lot of elements in there, niche market, a creative, a well done video that mixed a few creative modes. So you weren't just in one mode of consumption. And I will say this, you know, when I look at it, it was an effort up front, but you know, as you continue to, let's just say you did these type of videos ongoing, right?
Yeah.
You would get better and better, faster and faster.
Yep.
And I can't imagine the impact if you took that time. And this is the deception a lot of people have is if I take that same amount of time and spread it across two months, well, I'll just create content for all of the platforms.
Yeah.
And then what happened on YouTube would happen on all of them. And and it's like, no, it's almost, you know what? It's almost like people respond to a split focus. Like you said, it's like YouTube knew you put a lot in there And when you watch it, you could tell like, okay, he focused on this. And when we don't, when we just kind of put our stuff everywhere, people don't give it that much attention. It's like,
no, well, because it probably
focus
sucks.
Attracts their attention, you know?
But doesn't that mean that it probably sucks? Like if you, because you didn't put like, when I mentioned that story about the email marketing or the email pop-up web page that I did.
Yep.
Like I wrote that in like 5 minutes, you know, because I was just angry. But I spent a month making that a piece, and I treated it that way.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a couple of articles on MoneyLab like that I could hand pick and go like that's something I worked on for weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if anything, you know, that I'm piecing together is experiment enough to you know where to put your time. You know, like
yeah,
go through yeah. that. Figure out where you should be putting your time. In the beginning, you know, of any process, any business, there's going to be that just initial feeling out. But be intentional when you find it
mm-hmm.
to double down, put your focus on it. And it's like you can always tell when there's a really good cook, when someone has taken their time with cooking. Yeah. You know, they've set the ingredients out the mm-hmm. day before, so it's room temperature. And you compare that to yeah. something you buy at the grocery store, and it's night and day, man.
You're a hundred. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's a great analogy because I, you know, I love cooking and stuff. So yes, you're right. When you spend the time making dinner, it's great.
Yeah.
But like,
and the consumers love it.
The consumers love it. And the thing is, at the end of the day, too, and this is something I struggled with early on, mm-hmm. is I never really had a reason, you know, like, with Swim University, I wanted to build traffic. Why? Well, I wanted subscribers. Why? Well, I thought I could sell advertising. And then I tried that and I hated it. And I was like, this sucks. I don't want it. And then I like started designing my own products and I realized, oh, I'm actually pretty good at this whole course thing or this ebook thing. And so I was like, oh, wait, I have a product now. Okay. So what's my goal now? My goal is to get sales. My goal is to get traffic and to build trust and to get people to buy my thing because it's even better than my free stuff. And what is it? So yeah. when having that final point, the final action that you want anyone to take, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you can really use that to weed out things that you really don't need to do. I don't need to yep. do LinkedIn for Swim yep. University because yeah. that is not where my audience is.
Yeah.
The one thing I get, I still struggle with is Instagram
yeah.
because I'm like, okay, I am good at, I can take a picture and I have a brewery, so it looks cool. And so like I'm gaining followers, but they can't click anything. They can't yeah. go anywhere. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, why am I focusing all this time on Instagram when I could do, you know, one video on YouTube and bring in a ton of traffic to my website and bring a ton of attention to my products.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yep.
I'm saying Instagram might not be that bad, but it's also with Instagram, it's not evergreen. Nothing's evergreen. And mm-hmm. so if I'm going to put time and effort into creating content, I want people to be able to find that content 10 years from now, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Man. Yeah. I love it, man. Matt, man, we can go on. We can keep going, man. I said this before we started, but I want my listeners to know, if anything, that just pay attention to the approach of experimenting. And it's okay. Like there is no right and wrong as long as you're learning.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll take a failed effort 10 times if I've learned from every single one, because that's just going to make me better going forward, specifically to my business. So, Matt, if people want to find out more about you, your experiments, whatever,
yeah.
what's the best way for them to contact you?
MoneyLab.co.
MoneyLab.co. All right, great. Well, that link will be in the show notes. Again, thank you for coming on to the podcast, man. It's greatly appreciated.
No, I appreciate you having me on.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Matt and I as we discussed those various experiments, and you started to see how, if anything, I hope you can understand that it's okay. It's okay not to know how something is going to work. It's okay not to know what you're really going to do. Let experiment, figure it out, try some stuff, but measure it and make sure that as you're measuring it, You're keeping track of what is working and what's not so that you can be effective in your experimentation. Now is the time for my invitation for you first time listeners to subscribe to the podcast. If you like this episode, we've got lots more where this came from. Binge worthy, by the way, but make sure you're subscribed so you can do so in all of the main podcasting outlets to the All Systems Go podcast. And make sure now as well, when you're subscribing, that you leave your 5-star rating and review. Here at Automation Bridge, we are dedicated to training digital marketing professionals to become automation service providers. I have to say, if you have not listened to digital marketing versus marketing automation, what's the difference, that episode, please go do so. And it will mean more to you when I say train digital marketing professionals to become automation service providers, because small businesses, they are in dire need of marketers who understand technology and know how to marry it appropriately to profitable marketing strategies for the deployment of automated systems in those businesses for rapid growth. That's what an automation service provider is, and that's what they do. Okay. So if when you're listening to this and the technical side really kind of piques your interest and you're like, ooh, wow, I didn't know. Can I do that for a living? The answer is yes. Marketing automation is one of the fastest growing industries in digital marketing. I'm telling you, I'm seeing the need with my own eyes and serving it with my hands as well as the collective community. But we need help, not just me. We need help. These small businesses, they really do. They need somebody who understands how to approach automation the right way for their business, specific to their strategy. So if that's you and you listen to this podcast, or when you listen to the podcast, it just excites you on another level. You're in the field implementing marketing for clients. Even if you are your client, you have that desire. People tend to come to you all the time for tech questions and suggestions. If that's you, that's a strong indicator. You need to get with a strong community and a mentor like myself to help you navigate and guide the industry, shorten your learning curve, and get you on the fastest path to success. So if that's you, what I want you to do is go to automationbridge.com/ASP. ASP for Automation Service Provider. In short, ASP. And you can take the next steps to talk to myself or someone on my team to see if you will be a good fit for any of our program offerings that we have running and upcoming. Okay. The time is now and the need has never been greater. It's only going to increase. Get in early. Put your flag down. Okay. Get in early and really help make a difference with the responsible deploying of automated systems for small businesses. Okay. The All Systems Go podcast, everybody, is accepting guests. So if you know people like Matt, or the likes that have a interesting and valuable message from results that they have produced in their business, please send them to automationbridge.com/guest, or you can go to automationbridge.com/guest and submit their information on their behalf. We will reach out, and if it makes sense, if we see that they're a good fit for our audience, then we will schedule some time and they'll be on the podcast. We love SaaS owners. So right now we're in the process of reaching out to CEOs of a lot of the tools that I recommend and use to have them come on. If you're a SaaS owner, we invite you. Come on, talk about your tools. Let's break it down. Let's let my audience know what's available. Okay. Consultants at all levels. If you're experiencing success, come on, let's talk about it. Okay. All of the show notes in the podcast are accessible at automationbridge.com/podcast. You can subscribe there and listen to all other episodes at your leisure. So until next time, I see you online. Automate responsibly, my friends.